around the NFL podcast.
Thinks swearing is performative.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. It's funny the things that Wes would say. That was one of them. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with just one hero right now. It's Greg Rosenthal and our good friend, Mark Sessler. A little bit under the weather today, so we hope to have him back for the network show on Friday and then back in action next week. And Greg, I mean, I think we needed to call in some reinforcements. We can't do just a two-hander. This isn't a Mike and the Mad Dog show. We need more.
We could. I mean, that's selling us short, Dan. We've done this for 7 years. But the show will be much better with a third quality guest that we have.
And quality is the word. Let's welcome him on. He is the football writer over in Bristol. And he is a... we're all longtime fans of his work. This is his second appearance on the show. Give me a little sweet guitar lick. And now... Yeah, you know who he is. Bill Barnwell back in the house on the Around the NFL podcast. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? A pale replacement for Mark Sessler, but I will do my best.
Now, you were on the show with him. It was going to be four of us. Barnwell, who I've known now for, you know, more than a decade. It took us 7 years to have him on by mistake, but now we're just taking advantage of you. We moved the time around all day. You know, you were very flexible. What a show this is going to be.
This is my daily project. I am committed to this. I would be here all day and all night if you guys would have me.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. You're going to regret those words. yes, Bill Barnwell is with us to go through all the happenings in the NFL, in our league. And a little later in the show, we are going to... Bill wrote two great pieces, as he does every year, breaking down the free agent signings that he thought were smart and the ones that he didn't like very much at all. And we're also going to catch up with the news. But I feel like, and I have two very smart football men with me right now. I'm pinching myself. I have to say, this is the time, Bill,
yes,
right or wrong, where the real smart teams do their damage now. Second and third wave, right? The players that people aren't thinking as much about, you're going to see some of these guys coming off the board the next week or two that are going to have a big impact in 2021.
Day one of free agency, as you guys know. It's for the basics. It's for the simps. Is that the right word?
It's for the Patriots. It's for the Patriots.
The new basics of the NFL. I mean, it seems like year after year, you can sort of take the first day of free agency and take about 90% of the contracts you see and say, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. That was a bad idea. And it does seem like as time goes on, as you get into the end of the first week and now in the second week of free agency, we see smarter signings happening. We see teams who we typically regard as smart making moves now. And of course, we see teams trying to make moves like the Ravens, for example. Those moves don't always work out, but at least there is a coherent plan and a grasp on what the market is. Whereas in the first day of free agency, you may have no idea what the market is, as we saw with the team you just mentioned, the New England Patriots.
It's gone quickly, though. I mean, things got quiet fast this week, relatively. Yes. We have some news, but, you know, we're leading the show with T.Y. Hilton in a second. That's a big step down, you know, as like a top story. And I'm looking at my original top 101, and there's, I think, only four players left out of the top 40. And two of those have major injury problems. Mm-hmm. That's like the main reason why they're not even... you know, signed yet, Jadeveon Clowney and Mitchell Schwartz, who I threw out of there just for respect, even though like he maybe is retiring. But if he plays again, then I feel like, well, he's worth a shot. He's worth a shot if he plays at some point.
Didn't Kyle Long just come back after like 3 years out of the league?
Yeah.
Yes. Mitchell be back.
We'll see. He could be, and he would be an asset, you would think, if he's healthy. Yes, let's do it. Let's, before we get into Bill slamming some teams, including Greg's Patriots, which I love.
That's why you wanted Bill. Bill, do you think swearing is performative, by the way? It was one of the hottest takes ever by our friend Chris Wesseling, and it did make me rethink it. Rethink swearing. I don't think that's totally true. I think in the right spot, but maybe it's still performative a little bit. It's a hot take.
I think it's certainly performative to an extent. Like, I remember at Grantland, we had the ability to curse in our articles. Like, there was like a swear word in the first article ever on Grantland, and people were like, oh, this is crazy. Writing on the internet with curse words, you can't do that. And I think I did it once, and then I was like, eh, I don't need to do this. Like, writing, there's a lot of words I can use.
Writing is definitely, writing swear words is definitely performative.
I think so. On a podcast, I think you have to be very selective. I would say maybe if I do one a year, I feel like I am using it appropriately.
I mean, isn't writing on some level performative itself? I mean, you want
isn't,
to?
Isn't, want sure. to? Isn't living performative?
Right. I mean, podcast is completely performative. So that you have a good point, Dan.
Here is one take I'll share here, because again, I'm in the midst, Bill, I've now moved in, but there's still a lot of work to be done. I injure myself every day, whether sure. it's catching my hand in a door or the hammer, something goes horribly wrong. And I have two young boys in the house, and you're trying to set a good example and not use certain swear words. But when I do invariably bang my thumb, I will, you know, I'll let it rip. I'll say or something like that. Sure. Now, here's the thing, and that was performative. No, that was actually just telling the story. But that's I don't know.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. I have actually read about this, okay. that when you use language like that, it actually is, from the body standpoint, it actually helps. It's a way your brain handles pain. So it actually has a physical use in those type of situations.
I think that makes sense, but it also sounds like an excuse someone came up with to justify swearing. It sounds like a team justifying a free agent move. They spent a little too much money, and they're like, they're okay with it, but they want to have a good excuse publicly.
That was Bill, you know, segueing us back on track.
No,
here.
But I think
he's like, we wouldn't do this on the Bill Barnwell show. Me and, you know, Brinson would be really locking it down right now.
All right, then let's do that if that's indeed the case. Let's hit the news, Ricky.
Now here's what's happened so far: the Oral Roberts University stunning Ohio State.
Now, first of all, kudos—a shot across Bert Breer's bow from Kevin Harlan. But more, I just wanted to point out that remember that Kevin Harlan is not just a gift to NFL fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk about the great broadcasters out there, and we've had Kevin on the show, and we're all big fans. You know, you plug in on March Madness, there he is. He's all over the place, and he's one of the greats. Next, when we do our power rankings, Greg, next time for our announcers, we need to keep in mind just the versatility that the man has.
Have you guys done a power rankings for announcers?
We did a light one, yeah. We didn't totally say who was last. That was sort of like a group. But we did the top, and Harlan was very close to it.
Can we say, now that Dick Stockton retired, can we say that he was last? No.
Oh, no.
Well, that's mean.
No.
I mean, he...
the man just retired. Give him a few days.
He did the Carlton Fisk game in the 75 World Series. So, the last few years were just like Johnny Unitas in a Chargers uniform. It was an all-time legend. Doesn't change what he did.
I know.
I feel like someone just hit a big prop on Greg making a baseball reference in the first 20 minutes of the show.
All right, let's get into it. Yes, Greg teased that T.Y. Hilton re-signs with the Indianapolis Colts 1 year, $10 million. Eight of that is guaranteed. The Colts were in the market to add another receiver for Carson Wentz. They kicked the tires on Sammy Watkins, but they end up going with T.Y. Hilton, 31 years old, 10th season. Finished strong, Bill. I think there was an idea that he was maybe going the way of A.J. Green, although the Cardinals certainly don't think A.J. Green's going the way of A.J. Green. And then he came on really strong and looked pretty vintage in December. Which version do you think Indianapolis gets in 2021?
I think they get something between those two. I know that's the boring answer, but I feel like he was a little better over the first half of the year than maybe the numbers indicated. He had a lot of plays where, like, I think he had a bunch of touchdowns called back via penalty, maybe, or some big plays that were narrowly out of bounds. Maybe like he had it felt like he was on the fringes of being the guy he had been in years past, and then in the second half maybe was a little more lucky. I think part of this depends on Carson Wentz, and I think part of it depends on how the other receivers in that group develop, because if Paris Campbell is healthy, which he has not been for the first 2 years of his career, if Michael Pittman takes a step forward, you know, I don't think T.Y. Hilton's going to be more than a secondary or even tertiary threat in that offense. So we know Carson Wentz is someone who I don't know how well this translates from team to team, but in Philadelphia was a guy who loved throwing to his tight ends. So I don't see this being like a dynamic downfield passing attack. And I think with T.Y., I mean, you know, he's a solid receiver, but I don't know that he is someone who is going to age all that well given his skill set.
He got open, though. I was always a big fan of his. I'm with you. He could have had a lot more yards in the first half of the year. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of just either just missed throws or penalties and things like that. He could still get open. I like watching him. I find it interesting. Rap Sheet said he turned down more money from the Ravens. The Ravens mm-hmm. keep like... I don't know if this is all true, but they keep getting, if it is, this is like the third deal, supposedly, where they've offered slightly more money and the player didn't take it.
Mm. Rap Sheet said it was quote unquote significant in terms of more money. And yeah, you do wonder if there's something to that. The Juju situation, now this, do wide receivers, when they look at the two offers and they go, well, this is the team that threw the ball 404 times last year, less than anyone in the league. If there's a tiebreaker, I'm going to go to the team that throws the football to me.
Especially on a one-year deal. And you don't have to move. He's been there. He's the man. I love T.Y. Hilton. I thought maybe I was being biased, but I thought he had a lot left and was, you know, still the best receiver on a pretty good offense last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be true if the Ravens offered maybe a three-year deal that had maybe just a tiny bit more in guaranteed money, which I wouldn't shock me either. I think if you're a receiver and you're looking at the Ravens, the first thing you're thinking is, oh, I'm going to have to block a lot. Like, most times I'm going to be on the field, I'm going to be blocking.
Yeah,
and that might not be the most fun thing. Like, you might want to just run routes. That's more fun than blocking to me as someone who's not a receiver and doesn't have to block. So
right. I get you paid more in the long run to be catching the football rather than doing that dirty work.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I feel like it's going to be tough for the Ravens. It might be a position where they have to go out and use a first-round pick on a wide receiver or maybe trade Orlando Brown for a wide receiver of some nature.
In other news. All right, Barnwell. I don't know, Bill, where'd you grow up, Bill?
I grew up in Queens, New York City.
Oh, that's where my mother was born. So you born in New York, Giants fan. I don't know where you're at in your fandom in current days, but I do want to see where you are in the Giants right now. So Kenny Golladay, obviously we know that news from last week. He gets the big deal to be their first true number one since Odell left town. They stay busy. This happened a few days back. They signed Adoree Jackson, the cornerback, formerly of the Titans, 3 years, $39 million, $26.5 million guaranteed. So that's top money in this mm-hmm. market right now. How you feel about the Giants in general and these signings?
I'm a little skeptical. And I mean, it's less about the players and more about the logic that led to the players arriving, right? Kenny Golladay, a guy who was one of the top receivers on the market, in a market where top receivers have basically all signed for one-year deals. And Kenny Golladay extracts a significant multi-year contract from the Giants. I don't think the contract itself is the issue, but I don't know who else they were bidding against to give him that multi-year contract. And then with Adoree Jackson, we talked a little bit about this on Twitter, Greg, if I'm not mistaken. Something happened here. There's some, like, someone made a mistake. This can't have been a logical thing. Because Tennessee Titans could have kept Adoree Jackson, guaranteed his fifth-year option for a little over $10 million.
Right.
He leaves. He's a free agent. The Giants give him a three-year, $39 million deal with, I believe, according to Ian Rapoport, $16 million in year one. I want to say 26 or 29 over two. Like, you know, clearly more than 10 over one. And even if you trade a seventh-round pick to Tennessee to get Adoree Jackson, you still have the leverage to sign him to a better deal, even if you want to sign him to a multi-year contract. So either Tennessee did not appropriately scout out the market for Adoree Jackson and cost themselves the opportunity to get a draft pick, or the Giants did not appropriately figure out if they were going to make a trade for Adoree Jackson and paid over the odds for him once he became a free agent, even though nobody wanted to trade for him on a one-year deal for a little over $10 million. Now, I don't know what you guys think, but could they both be wrong? Is there one team that's more likely to make a mistake like this? Given what the Giants seem to do with value when it comes to players, I do kind of lean towards them making the mistake.
But the Titans are weird. I am with you. I didn't even think about the draft pick thing. They could have gotten a draft pick for Adoree Jackson. I don't totally buy, you know, with Golladay and with Jackson. Like, if the price gets that high, mm-hmm. There was someone else bidding almost always. Like, it just doesn't come out. It's the same thing with, like, the Jared Davis deal made no sense to me for the mm-hmm. Jets. But I think it does indicate there was another team bidding against him. It's just that's how it goes. It doesn't get that high out of nowhere. Maybe both those teams are making mistakes. I like Adoree Jackson a lot. He's totally streaky. Like mm-hmm. he can be like a top 10 cornerback for 8 straight games. But then he can get lit up and he could get hurt. And mm-hmm. I'm a little surprised he got money really at the top of the cornerback market. Like, he got the same as William Jackson and Shaquille Griffin, but I would say he has more upside than the two of them. At least the Giants are going for it. I don't care if the Giants blow it and they stink. They look a little more watchable. That's more important for me, is they've added some players I like to watch, and I think they'll be more competitive. So they're going to put the Giants in prime time. I'd rather watch them with Kenny Golladay and Adoree Jackson.
Now, Dan, I saw someone tweet this week that by adding Adoree Jackson, the Giants have the best secondary in football.
Stop.
Are we even sure they have the best secondary amongst the three New York teams?
Wow. Mm. By the way, I like grouping the Bills in. All the Bills fans listening are going to really be into that. Well, I mean, that means that
we're the only New York team.
Yeah, exactly. If that's indeed the case, Dave Gettleman's doing way better than I realized, because I was about to say, to your prior point, that it felt like it made a lot of logical sense that both John Robinson and Gettleman could have messed up.
Sure.
That checks out to me. Those two guys, there's some moves that I, over the last couple of years, that have been head scratchers.
The Titans let Jack Conklin go. He could have been a fifth year option guy. They mm-hmm. decided not to. He ends up being an all pro. Corey Davis could have been a fifth year option guy. And I don't understand when the teams now they're guaranteed, but I think last year they weren't. Like, they decided not to. It seems weird. Three straight guys basically that were first round picks, and not bad first round picks. You know, Conklin and Jackson, I would say, were good. Davis was okay, and they let them all go, and other teams paid them a lot. It's just weird.
Also weird, the Saints without Drew Brees. That's a thing now, and now we figure out what happens next at the quarterback position. Rap Sheet reported that Winston, quote, does have a leg up on Taysom Hill in the Saints quarterback competition. Mm. Greg, I know this is really this is getting you excited. You see Jameis Winston as you know, one of the great players of all time, essentially. Is that's where you're heading in terms of your description of the man. Do you think this is how it's going to play out? I still can't get past this, like, sneaking suspicion that Sean Payton's got something up his sleeve.
I think he's like a high variance player that at times can, look like a top 10 quarterback. The difference between him and Cousins maybe isn't that much. And I only put this in the news. This is not
by the
a
way,
level
you, Bill,
of
you
news.
Should know that Greg just said high variance player just to impress you. He doesn't usually say that with me and Mark.
This whole pod is just to impress Bill. I only put this in the news because I was curious. I did want to see what Bill thought. And I think it kind of is interesting because I have a theory that Rappaport is a little bit of the Jameis Winston whisperer, though. He kind of was saying for a while, you've brought this up before, Dan, that how close the Bucs were to paying Jameis Winston $30 million a year before he tanked in December 2019. And maybe he wasn't really that close. I don't really know. But I like that Rappaport's always been kind of banging the Winston drum. And I like this. This makes sense to me. It doesn't totally check out because they played Taysom Hill over him. But I am curious if you're at all excited, Bill, over the Winston thing coming.
I'm excited about the idea. But I think you brought up my concern, which is look at the money. Look at what they've done when they actually had an opportunity. Last year, they give Taysom Hill an inexplicable one-year $16 million extension, which guarantees him a significant amount of money for 2020. Now, of course, he gets that crazy four-year, $140 million fake extension, which is weird. I don't know how you tell your family about that. I don't know how you talk about that with, like, the people around you. I don't know. I mentioned this with my podcast yesterday with Lindsay Jones, where it's just like, do you tell your wife excitedly, I got a four-year, $140 million extension. It means nothing. It doesn't count for anything. There's no way we could see it. But, like, at least on paper, I'm worth this much. You know, they pay Taysom Hill. When Drew Brees goes down. They don't bring in Jameis. They start Taysom Hill for four starts. He was pretty much what you would have expected, right? Like, he wasn't.
He was okay. He was like, okay. He was Broncos not that
game,
bad.
The Broncos game was rough. The first half of the Eagles game was rough. But, like, Michael Thomas was hurt. They weren't 100% on offense. And they moved the ball pretty well. I thought he did fine, given what, you know, at least my expectations were for Taysom Hill. I think he had a QBR in the 55 range, which you could work with that. Then Jameis comes in, he throws one touchdown pass in the playoffs. They sign him to a one-year deal. He's making less than Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill has been the starter when they had to put somebody in. Like, I understand that they might be excited about the idea of Jameis, but when push comes to shove, they've been using Taysom, and they've been paying Taysom. So to me, I think until I actually see Jameis starting in week one, I assume Taysom's going to start.
Great. My favorite little nugget
was the rap sheet said, though, how good he was in practice. They were just like blown away by how he was in practice all year. I was like, okay, I'll buy it. This is his chance. I mean, I really think Sean Payton has a, and maybe Belichick had this too, but I really think whether it affects them or not, I don't know. But I think he would love nothing more than to be awesome without Drew Brees. He's putting his faith into Jameis Winston.
Let me ask you, though. 2022, we know what kind of quarterback Dan Campbell wants. We know the attitude Dan Campbell wants. Isn't there a pretty reasonable chance that Taysom Hill is the starting quarterback for the Detroit Lions?
That would be good. I kind of have this thing where I want them to become the NFL's Oklahoma City Thunder. I saw this stat that the Thunder have 17 first-round picks and 17 second-round picks in the next 6 years. Mm-hmm. I was like, some NFL team should try that. And the Lions are that team. And Taysom Hill would be the perfect quarterback in the meantime to do that strategy.
In other news, the Eagles have filled a hole in their roster. It's backup quarterback, hopefully backup quarterback, Joe Flacco, who gets actually a raise from what he was making last year coming off neck surgery and his one and done year with the Jets. He gets $3.5 million in guarantees. It can get up to $7.5 million if he hits a bunch of incentives. So he will be hypothetically here. Jalen Hurts is backup. Do you put anything into, Bill, when people are trying to figure out these backup positions and they say, well, this doesn't make sense because Joe Flacco can't move. He's almost a literal statue at this stage of the game. And Jalen Hurts' whole game is about kinetic movement and making plays. Does that make this a bad fit, or is it good just to have a 36-year-old who could sling it a little bit still?
Kinetic was absolutely to impress Barnwell there.
It's a Radiohead B-side, so I appreciate that. It works on multiple levels for me. I like the idea of having a quarterback who does the same thing as your starter. I think it makes sense. I think it makes it easier to sub guys in. I love the Mitch Trubisky signing in Buffalo for that reason. Like, having a guy who's mobile, who can run the same sort of offensive stuff, even if he's not as good, at least you don't have to make all that many changes on offense. I have really gone back and forth on this Joe Flacco signing, guys. Like,
wow.
Most backup quarterback signings, I'm like, good, or kind of bad. I forget about it. I feel like I've really gone... Like, I thought it was awful. I thought it was great. I thought it was awful again. I'm going back towards great now because I think the Eagles fan base, which I would say hates the team right now.
Yeah, sounds right.
They could love Joe Flacco. Local guy, kind of a goof, tall white guy. I feel like he has sort of like less athletic Nick Foles vibes, but he's a local on top of that. So I think Eagles fans love their backup quarterback until they actually have to see him play. And I could see Joe Flacco coming in for perhaps an injured Jalen Hurts and winning a couple games and having them be vaguely competitive in a messy NFC East. And I could see Joe Flacco not getting a statue necessarily, not getting the Nick Foles statue, but at least having a menu item named after him at a Eagle Stadium concession stand.
Wow. That would be amazing.
The fact that Flacco moves like a statue, can't you just like stick Joe Flacco in front of the stadium for 5 hours around game days and just then you don't have to worry about paying anyone to make the statue?
You can get a non-fungible token of Joe Flacco and just put it outside the stadium.
I love that. I'm a little wary, though, of the quotes he had on his press conference. And the Eagles fans got all fired up because there was all these incentives in the deal that could make it high. I mean, he's getting paid.
Wait, Joe Flacco had a press conference?
He did,
I missed it. Why?
I don't know. I was a little wary, though, because he was like, they haven't told me what my role is, and I'm a competitive guy. And I got thinking, and he was like, I got thinking about the Baltimore year when I don't hold it against him, but I don't think he was not like Alex Smith to Lamar Jackson's Patrick Mahomes. Even though they played it okay publicly, he was a little more Drew Bledsoe to Tom Brady, where he was clearly a little resentful and maybe not overly helpful and made a little bit of a problem, which isn't like shocking from a guy who won a Super Bowl. I'm not going to like hold it. But I think it might just be a little bit of a messy situation. He is not the Ryan Fitzpatrick guy, I think, that's just like going to love up the guy underneath him. And I'm almost a little surprised like Flacco's still playing. I thought he was going to maybe just retire once he wasn't making big money. But he said of all things, Dan, that playing with the Jets helped him realize how much he loved playing the game.
Yeah, it's Adam Gase, man. That's the culture Adam Gase.
I don't know what that was. And he was okay. He was okay with the Jets. He could have been worse. He was a little better than I thought.
Two things that I picked up in the last few minutes. First of all, you know Bill's a football guy when he's just like laying in bed thinking about whether the Joe Flacco deal was right for the Eagles. I love that. And two, Greg, you have yet to get off any passive-aggressive shots at me about how Joe Flacco actually played better than Sam Darnold last year. If you want to squeeze that in, go ahead. I mean,
that's well, you made me feel bad that I do bring up Darnold every episode last show, and then I was like, you know what, you might have a point there.
well, that I kind of like brought it up.
I said Flacco. Yeah, I said Flacco was a little better than I expected last year. It was low expectations, but I thought he played a little better than people that probably didn't watch him think.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you think
more Flacco?
It is going to be Flacco related. I'm not going to lie. Do you think the decision to bring in Joe Flacco precludes the Eagles from drafting a quarterback in the first round?
No, it shouldn't.
I don't think it does. I don't think it should.
No. Covers your bases. I mean, he's not much money. You do need a second quarterback. They don't know if they're going to get, if they do want a quarterback, they don't know at this point whether they're going to get him or not. So they got to have both bases covered.
I have a thought about Hurts that I thought he showed enough last year that the organization and the fan base would be excited about him now getting this opportunity. But you kind of, from what you hear out there, that there's this door opening for them continuing to look for a quarterback, makes you think that maybe I was misreading the situation, or I thought he played better than he actually played. What did you guys think about Jalen Hurts on balance in the work that he did get last year?
I agree with you. I agree with exactly what you said, Dan.
I think his first game was his best game. And I think that sort of colors the analysis, like him coming in, beating the Saints with an upset. I mean, what were his numbers in that game where he was benched in week 17?
Let me pull it up.
They were terrible. He was bad in that Sunday night game.
Right.
That feels like a million years ago.
It really does. I mean, like, I don't think he played well enough that you should say, okay, we're committed to this guy for the next 5 years, or poor enough that we should say he does not deserve a chance to start again. But I think if you have a guy that you absolutely positively love and he's on the board at 6, I don't think Jalen Hurts precludes you from drafting that guy, because remember, they drafted Jalen Hurts to be a backup, to be a guy who can grow value, to be a guy who was a situational player. I know that is, you know, I don't think they drafted Jalen Hurts to replace Carson Wentz. So the Jalen Hurts as a backup does not seem that outlandish to them, in a way that maybe having Carson Wentz as a backup would have been.
He rushed for 354 yards and 4 starts.
Yes.
He completed just over half his passes, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, QBR of 41, passer rating 77.6. I guess, yeah, maybe the numbers aren't as good as
I have overrated many a rookie quarterback, especially athletic ones, that have like 2 pretty good starts out of their first 4 in their rookie year, and then you think they're great. And
does this guy, one of their names rhyme with Blue Rock?
Yeah, that's one. Definitely got too excited for about him. I mean, I guess they didn't have to be that athletic either, because I'm thinking about
Trent Edwards, maybe?
Mike Glennon a little bit. I thought Mike Glennon could do so. He had a pretty good 13-game rookie year, but, you know.
This is a trillion years ago. Mike Glennon is a potential face of the Buccaneers. But now the Bucs are a totally different animal. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. And they are, this isn't just some narrative that's cobbled together in the offseason, you know. Oh, they're running it back. They're bringing guys back. And then it's like, well, no, there's a lot of churn going on. No, it really seems like they are going down the road of let's see if we can win a title again with mostly the same roster. And Ndamukong Suh, he's back. 1-year deal worth $10 million. And also coming back,
Donovan Smith, the tackle, agrees to a two-year, $31.8 million extension, $30 million guaranteed over the next two seasons. What do you think, Bill?
I think the only person who is not back that I can think of is Joe Haig. And I wonder whether the organization punished Joe Haig for not catching that touchdown pass in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's fair if that's how they want to do it.
Ouch.
Set an example, but I think otherwise, this is a team I thought was very deep heading into last season. So, you know, why not run it back? Like, it's not as if, you know, if Brady stinks, like, you're screwed anyway. So, like, why not run it back with the same veterans? You can get guys for cheaper. I think as the offseason goes on, if they have any cap space left, they're going to be a very appealing destination for people on one-year deals because of Brady, because of the Super Bowl win, because of no income tax and good weather in Florida. So I could see maybe waiting and saying, let's wait and see who kind of falls out. Who falls through the cracks, and we'll get first shot at those guys. But I do think that they were a legitimately very good team last year, and I have no issues with them running it back with the same guys they had.
One big piece, Playoff Lenny, still out there.
He's out there. Antonio Brown's still out there. I saw Greg Alman of The Athletic wrote 95.5% of their defensive snaps are returning to the team, and 90% of their offensive snaps are returning. And if Fournette or Brown return, or both, that offensive number will go up even more. They are loaded. They are a great test of like whether bringing it back is a rolling everything back the same is a good idea or not.
Would you guys bring back Fournette?
Nah, I don't care about Fournette.
At the right price. I would not pay him the playoff version.
Nah, I'm not. I mean,
what did Mark Ingram get?
One for three. Yeah, I mean, that would be fine.
That's about it.
Yeah, I'm with that.
8 o'clock delight, Ricky. All right, the Cardinals sign cornerback Malcolm Butler, formerly of the Titans, one-year contract. This is a quick fire. Barnwell, what do you got?
Better than Patrick Peterson last year, probably, maybe.
For sure, for sure. He was good last year, Malcolm Butler.
The New York Jets bring in Tevin Coleman, the former 49er. So a lot of talk, Greg, about Saleh bringing in his guys from San Francisco. This is the first guy to actually come aboard, gangrene.
The ultimate test for them, I think, is if they can run the ball with that same offensive line, it'll prove how smart this hire was.
Yeah, they still got to get that line in order. James White, they re-signed him to a one-year, $2.5 million. I just lowered Playoff Lenny's contract, $2.5 million, Bill Barnwell. James White back, that feels like a nice pickup.
I thought he was going to go to the Bucs. I thought he was going to be the Bucs running back, so I'm shocked he went back to New England.
They keep bringing guys back. They're looking good, Danny.
Yeah, you got to run back the 2020 Patriots. Oh, we're getting a lot of guys back from the opt-out. All right, come back. Lawrence Guy is back, four-year contract with the Pats.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys did not do well elsewhere. David Andrews is another player who I think expected to leave and did not, their center.
Jadeveon Clowney is on the radar for the Browns. And once again, Bill, it's another team. This makes a lot of sense. You bookend him with Myles Garrett and you got something cooking, but, you know, Name versus game. Yes or no that it's a better signing in theory than actuality if the Browns did it?
He will play 8.5 games. He will have one game where he looks incredible, and he will be anonymous for the rest of the season. So I will say mostly name.
What do you think, Greg?
I would do it. I think this is the year where, like, you're not going to have to pay much. It's a pretty big upside.
And finally, Damian Williams. Let's hit this properly. Formerly of the Chiefs, a playoff hero, Super Bowl hero, one-year contract with the Bears. Maybe this will get Bears fans pumped up about the 2021 season.
I think this is just a distraction ploy from that Andy Dalton QB1 tweet. Poor Andy Dalton at this point. He's taking too much grief. It's not his fault the Bears stink.
Are they going to tweet out RB2 for Damian Williams? That's good. As they announce the signing?
That's, again, we talk about this all the time. You know, the social media accounts of these teams, they're very powerful. I mean, because a lot of people see it and it helps to kind of become a talking point around the team. And you have some 23-year-old intern firing off that QB1 with no context of how it's going to be received. And it's just another thing to put on one of the most important players on your team's plate now, getting mocked in public. You got to have more experience. You have to have gatekeepers involved with the social media accounts.
Maybe they knew it was coming and they just did it kind of in a fun way to get engagement. Let's do some breaking news. I know Bill Barnwell doesn't care about this one as much, but I am so excited. Dan, it has been announced all California adults will be eligible for a COVID-19 vaccine starting April 15th. Let's get that vaccine here. Put it in my arm. We're getting there.
Now, I don't know if Bill's been vaccinated or not, and that's his...
I'm just saying it. Well, he's not a California resident.
I don't want to rub
resident.
It in on him.
Or, oh, yeah.
Are you guys offering me a California residency to get a shot? Because I'll be on that next plane over, guys.
I mean, April 15th's still a little bit away, but I like some clarity in the situation. It feels good.
That's good.
Feels good.
Great news.
I have found shots for everyone I know in my family but me. So when it happens, I'm going to be very excited.
All right, that's what's happening in the news. All right, so Bill cranks it out every year. It's a must-read every year. The best NFL free agency signings, and yes, the worst, which to me, it's always a more enjoyable read. I like to read about who messed up. I don't know why. I don't know if everyone's like that or if that's just like what I'm like, but I'm always curious about that because it's like, here's the real deal from people that know. But let's start with some sunshine.
Okay.
And you ranked it 1 to 10. So I guess it would make sense for me to start with number one here. You thought the best signing in free agency to date, Trent Williams back to San Francisco. And obviously everyone knows why it makes sense to, you get to keep your franchise left tackle. Yeah. But what makes it like the best signing? What made it so smart beyond just the fact that he's a great player at a key position?
So I think two things. Number one, players who are as good as Trent Williams do not hit the market. I mean, you get the rare exception once every few years. And this is, of course, another exception. Williams would not have left Washington if he hadn't basically held out for a year. He would not have been able to make it to the Niners and got the no trade tag attached, franchise tag attached to his deal if that had not happened. And then he's now 32, I think, maybe turning 33. But he is a superstar player at one of the four most important positions in football. And those guys just do not become available. Like, there has to be some kind of major, major flaw, like, you know, Drew Brees having a torn labrum or something that would cause a player of that caliber to be available in free agency. So to get that guy is great. Now, it would be more impressive if, like, the Chiefs had got him because they didn't have him previously. But given that he was a, you know, quote-unquote free agent technically, I give the Niners credit for bringing him in. I mean, this is a team that, when I get to the other part of this, you know, that has a major, major, major question mark at quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy who has not been able to stay healthy and didn't stay healthy last year with Trent Williams at left tackle. But having great tackles is going to give him the best chance of staying healthy. And we saw 2 years ago that when Jimmy Garoppolo was healthy, they were a good enough team to make it to the Super Bowl. So I think he makes that team so fundamentally better given the inexplicable choice they've made to pay Jimmy Garoppolo $25 million a year.
Wow. Quarterback.
And I think that he is a guy who was a Hall of Famer and who still has 4 or 5 years left at a premium position playing as one of the 2 or 3 best players at that position. That those guys just do not become available while they're still close to the prime of their careers.
Bill really burying Jimmy G was the secret highlight of that analysis.
$25 million for a guy who has not been able to stay healthy in pretty much every one of his pro seasons.
And you know what? Sometimes football is a game of inches. Maybe that's not the comment we're making if he hits Manny Sanders on that deep shot at the end of the Super Bowl. But he didn't, and that's how sports work.
I really believe more than any team they are biding their time for Deshaun Watson. And I think Jimmy G is the perfect guy to hold in between because they can get rid of him for nothing. They can trade him the second they want Deshaun Watson with no cap hit whatsoever. So he's at a good part of his contract. I'm with you on Trent Williams because I think his contract got overlooked in terms of how affordable it was. Mm-hmm. It's really 3 for $60 or yeah. 4 for $80. So that's 20 a year for Trent Williams. They added on these phony years at the end he'll probably never get to.
Right.
And so he's making less than some of the top left tackles, a little less. And more to my point is that he's making barely more than Joe Tooney. Mm-hmm. In terms of guaranteed money, this contract's almost identical to Joe Tooney. So that's why I put Tooney on my worst contracts list. Ooh. Not to skip ahead, but just like positional value. And did that get in the way of them just paying Trent Williams a little more? Mm-hmm. Seems like it did. So that was a bad job by the Chiefs.
I agree.
Well, Joe Tooney,
never, you know, an all pro level like Trent Williams, and you're paying him to be a superstar basically at that position. You have two Raiders, Bill, new Raiders on this list, which I found interesting. You got John Brown, who got a little less than $4 million over 1 year. That makes a lot of sense to me because of the upside there if he could stay healthy. Yannick Ngakoue is interesting. 2 years, $26 million. So you don't break the bank for him. Mm-hmm. But is there some mounting evidence that Ngakoue is kind of peaked as a player on some level, or is there some flaws in his game and he's not worth that level of contract? Apparently, I mean, you would disagree, but just throwing that out there.
That's fair. I think that was a situation where maybe teams were looking at his last year of work, where he got traded to the Vikings, which seemed like it was a mess. They never had Daniel Hunter, so he was being double teamed pretty consistently. Goes to the Ravens, where he's not a great scheme fit. You know, did an okay job, but he's going to be a pass rusher. He is a 4-3 hand in the dirt pass rusher, which is the role I believe he's going to play in Las Vegas, for a team that desperately needed pass rushing help, for a team that has been such a mess on defense. And I think even in a down year last year, he had 8 sacks. Like, even in a year where he was disappointing, he did pretty well for himself. And I think that he's still very young. He has a great track record. Maybe the argument that I could see is when he's not playing next to Calais Campbell, he's not the same guy. But I think that he is going to be, like, his floor is like that 6-7 sack range where he's not going to kill you. He's going to be an okay pass rusher. And his ceiling is, this was a guy who looked like he was going to be one of the highest paid edge rushers in all of football 2 years ago when he was about to come due for a contract. So I think he has significant upside at a pretty reasonable price for edge rushers. He's not getting $20 million a year. I mean, you know, $13 million for an edge rusher really is not all that much. So the Raiders also get a second year if Ngakoue does impress. So, you know, there are some guys where you sign a guy to a one-year deal and it's like, okay, even if he breaks out, well, what do you get? Like, you still have to sign him in free agency next year. But Ngakoue, because they have him for 2 years, they actually get a second year at what would be a lower cost if they want to use that as leverage to re-sign him to a longer contract or have a guy for an under-market deal in 2022.
He's a little bit of a cautionary tale of betting on yourself because, according to the reports that Jacksonville had offered him a few years ago, he probably would have been better off just taking a long-term deal from the Jaguars when he had it. Before we go to worse, though, I do want to get your thoughts on Team Costco, as you called them, on a Twitter exchange, which is the Houston Texans. I love that. And you threw one of their signings in there in your list. I don't know, just as a rep of the Texans, because you wanted to talk. I think it was Andre Roberts, who's a special teamer, who's a good special teamer. But Team Costco, what do you think of a wild approach to free agency where they've signed about 15 guys to almost identical 1 year, $2 or $3 million contracts?
I like teams that have a plan. I mean, the Las Vegas Raiders have made a couple really good signings. They have no plan. They are just a mess of throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that they're better this year than they were last year. The Bears have no plan. The Bears are just desperately, please God, let's get to 9 wins so we can all get extensions and we don't have to worry about losing our jobs. The Texans have a very clear plan, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, they were a team that was very top-heavy last year. They had 6 or 7 stars who needed to play like stars and stay healthy for them to make it to the Super Bowl. That did not happen. I don't know if you guys saw, the Texans were bad last year. And that's fine. They had all kinds of players who were replacement-level talents in meaningful roles on both sides of the football. By the end of the year, I mean, it was Chad Hansen, DFS darling, catching a ton of passes. It was, you know, guys in the secondary who were awful. They had underqualified guys across the roster. And I think what we've seen Nick Caserio do in his first year there is have a plan of, okay, we're going to build the back end of this roster. We are not going to sign another star. We are going to sign 15 guys who are going to make our special teams better, who are going to give us depth across the roster, who are going to have versatility in terms of filling multiple roles. And we're not going to be stuck with a guy who doesn't know what he's doing in a key situation late in a game. And I think that might not make a difference. This team is probably still going to be bad if Deshaun Watson is not their quarterback. But I think there is a logic to what they're doing that I appreciate. And I think that even if it doesn't pay off in the long run, the big picture here does make sense for how the Texans are approaching their roster problems and approaching this offseason.
Makes sense. And before we move to the negative, one more, because I love it. And Greg, you know this is a burgeoning love affair for the old Zeuser. You're part of the Boone Bros. You are all
Mike Boone and the Denver Broncos, and I love it. So 2 years, $2.6 million. So great value there if the guy can play. He was buried on the Minnesota depth chart, and now he's going to have a good chance, you think, to have good work because you got Melvin Gordon. I don't like Melvin Gordon. I don't know what it is. There's just
Dan spent
about
2 minutes on NFL Network on our show talking about Mike Boone. We had to be the first time ever.
I'm a Boone bro, okay? I'm the NFL Network's Boone bro. So you got Melvin Gordon, who's just, I don't know, he's just kind of sloppy to me. And then Philip Lindsay, they felt like Philip Lindsay wasn't a guy for them, and they let him go. And I guess is he one of the Costco buys by the Texans?
One of the best ones. I love him.
Yeah. Anyway, so it does feel like Mike Boone has an opportunity here. If that skill set that he flashed in Minnesota, he gets an opportunity in Denver.
Wait, now, Dan, I agree with you 100%. Greg, are you not a Boone bro? You're not part of the Boone Brigade?
I just thought it was a little out of left field. I hadn't heard anything from Dan about Mike Boone, and then suddenly out of nowhere, he's just like starting a whole fan club for him, and we're spending all this time. No, I'm for it. I like it. It seems like it's fun.
All the man does is produce. Give him the opportunity. Outside of that 1 week 16 game, in Fantasy Championship Week, where he broke people's hearts in 2019. Mm. Outside of that 1 week, he has been phenomenal. In the preseason, got to quote Adam Levitan, team preseason, excellent, excellent player in the preseason. A guy who I had on this list before Philip Lindsay was let go.
Wow.
I feel even better about it now.
I think part of my problem is just it was a branding problem. Initially, when he came into, like, I confused him and CJ Ham. They just seemed like they were like one person. They're these two big burly guys on Minnesota, and you know, they're very different. Boone is much better.
We were hiding out in the Boondocks.
Yeah, in the Boondocks.
And now the Boone Bros are out. Boone Brigade's good. Boone Bro listeners, hit me up. Maybe I'll set up a poll. Boone Bros, Boone Brigade, and whatever wins, we'll roll with going forward.
I will just point out that easy way to remember the difference between those two guys, the fullback is the one whose name is a food.
Right.
That's a good way to remember which one is the fullback and which one's not the fullback.
All right, it's now skew negative. Greg, unless you had any you wanted to throw in on the positive side.
Yeah, do you have any you're a particular fan of that maybe I missed
out? Ooh, no, I liked, well, the Juju and the Will Fuller deal stuck out to me, probably because of some of the wide receivers we'll get to. We'll probably talk Aguilar with you. But the wide receivers that signed later, it ended up looking so much better. I just don't get why Juju suddenly went from like, hey, he's a little overrated to like, he's not good at all. No, he's absolutely a quality starter. And Will Fuller, to me, is absolutely a one-year deal that is perfect because he has so much upside. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up there long-term. So I think the receivers made a lot of sense.
Let me ask you guys about the Juju decision. I know that there was the tweet going around about the various contracts Juju had been offered. Are you surprised he didn't go to the Chiefs? And do you think he should have gone to the Chiefs?
On a one-year prove-it deal, I probably would say, because there's a little bit, it's a little unsettled in Kansas City right now in terms of the wide receiver pecking order. He could have established himself, and with Tyreek there, probably maybe you get back into that Antonio Brown vibe where he could be the true number two. I think that probably would have made him more money in the long run, but he must have favored staying home.
Yeah, I don't know. He'd be number three there. I mean, because Kelsey and Hill are one and two.
Yeah.
Be on TV a lot.
Be on TV a lot. You're going to have some cool celebrations. You're probably going to score a bunch of touchdowns. It's going
to
be good for
you. You're more likely to win a Super Bowl. That's for sure.
More likely to win a Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know. I could see both sides of the argument, but I think that's one where I would have, if I had been his agent, I think I would have encouraged him to go to Kansas City.
Anybody else, Greg?
I just think Denver has been sliding under the radar. I know you didn't like the Ronald Darby signing, but I like Ronald Darby generally. And I just feel like They managed to get Kareem Jackson to take a pay cut since we last talked, and they get Kyle Fuller. There's kind of a known quantity in a system. It's more just like they have a plan. I don't know if it's going to work. They don't really have a quarterback, but their defense should be awesome. Like, I'm looking forward to watching that defense, and they brought back the right player, Shelby Harris, too. It made a lot of sense what they've done. They just haven't gotten the quarterback.
Okay, so if they had a quarterback, leave quarterback aside, where does their roster rank in the NFL from the other 52 spots on the roster?
I think it's above average. I think it's well above top average. 12. I think it's top 12 or so.
Me too.
It's annoying because now it's a 17-game season, but I was going to ask you how many wins, and then you could give me 9 or 10 or 11, and I'd
be able to like contextualize that immediately. If Ryan Fitzpatrick is that quarterback, ooh, and you had an assigned a win
wins?
Total.
Yeah, 10. Let's give him 10.
Classic 10-7 season.
Right. That's true.
They profile to me as an 11-6 team potentially.
Wow.
That's weird. I'm not happy about that.
It's going to be so annoying. Like at the end of this year, when we're going to see tweets from fans, like, how can you say crappy things about Trey Lance when he just set the, you know, the rookie passing record for my team? And it's like, yeah, he played an extra game, dude. Like, come on.
It is. It's going to really mess up records. Record, you know, individual numbers are already messy in football, but it's totally going to ruin them.
And then you have guys that in the 70s and 60s, they play a 14-game season. Yeah. It's like, right. Now it's like a different sport.
People are going to discount Mike Boone's 2,000-yard 17-game season. They shouldn't do that.
They should not. Absolutely. All right. On the other side of things, yep. And you know I love this. You start bang, bang right off the top. The Patriots were the big story last week. You have Nelson Aguilar and Jonnu Smith 1-2 in your write-ups of worst NFL free agency mm-hmm. signings. Why is that the case, Bill?
Well, last year, Nelson Aguilar hits the market. He is a meme in Philadelphia. He is not generally wanted by any team, including a team that needed receivers in the New England Patriots. He signs a one-year deal for, I think, the minimum or close to the minimum, and has a good year, but a year that's totally out of line with his prior career performance. Even in this breakout season, he drops 8.6% of the passes thrown in his direction. So, a Patriots team that needed help last year did not offer him like $1.5 million or $2 million for 1 year. Now thinks he is worth $16 million guaranteed. Where even if he gets cut after year one, he's going to get $16 million one way or another. I mean, that's fundamentally changing the way you view a player after one good but not otherworldly season. And I think that's a thing that the Jaguars have done for years and had it go against them. Washington football team did for years and made mistakes with it. The Jets have done and regretted it. Every bad franchise when it comes to free agency over the past 20 years has made that mistake over and over again. And then that's compounded by the fact that, as you guys brought up earlier, I mean, Will Fuller signed a one-year deal for $10 million. Juju signs a one-year $8 million deal. These guys are getting one-year deals for half as much in terms of guaranteed money as Nelson Aguilar got from the Patriots, and they're all better players with more upside. So I just don't like the Aguilar move. I think it's misreading the market. I think it's overvaluing that 1 year. When it comes to Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, good football players, right? I mean, good, solid NFL caliber tight ends, but they're now the third highest paid player in terms of average annual salary at tight end in all of football behind Travis Kelce and George Kittle. And they're going to be better at tight end. They're going to have a functional tight end group. But the idea that they're going to have Gronk and Aaron Hernandez because they signed two guys who... you know, Jonnu Smith, who hasn't topped 500 receiving yards once in his pro career, or Hunter Henry, a guy who we know has been tantalizing but never had that breakout season. They know that those two guys are going to be, you know, superstars suddenly because they're getting paid like superstars. It just doesn't happen. They're paying them like the players they want them to be, as opposed to the players they've actually been or the players they project to be over the next several seasons.
I think they went into the free agency period like it was the draft.
Yes.
That they planned for this. I think, somewhat to their credit, I do think they looked at everything that was going on going into last offseason, thought this would be an amazing offseason to have a lot of cap space because sure. It's not going to be out in the market. But they went into free agency like it was the draft, that they were going to get Aguilar. I think it was the Raiders who bid him up. Mm-hmm. And it was like they went back and forth, and so that number got crazy. Someone was clearly in on Jonnu Smith to a high degree.
Oh, sure.
And it's like they went into it. I don't know if they knew they would get both tight ends at that point. I think they thought Henry, the price was good enough. But that's how you make it is how you make mistakes. The Aguilar signing reminds me a little of, even though Leonard Floyd's returning to the Rams, it's like you bought super low. That was great. But now you're buying high off the good season. But it's like it's just sort of obvious, you know, what's better, you know, buying low or buying high. The Patriots are buying extremely high on Aguilar. I like Jonnu Smith, but they're paying a premium because they just went into free agency being like, we are going to get these five guys, and they just did whatever they could to get them.
Yeah. So mission accomplished, Banner. Once again, we wanted these guys, we got these guys. Don't worry about anything else.
The Aguilar signing has real Laurent Robinson vibes to me. For going back a decade or so.
I don't care about the money that much, though, because they're either wrong that they're good or bad players or not. Like that, they're all 2-year deals essentially. They still have more cap space than they really need. They might be very wrong, but their roster was so bad that that the only thing that I wish was just like, well, why didn't you sign Juju Smith-Schuster? I don't. He's a pretty similar player to Aguilar. I know he's more. Aguilar's a better deep threat and a little more of an outside guy, but I would say they're quite similar, and Juju is much more reliable.
Yeah, it's more the opportunity cost, right? Like, it's not like you're getting a better player with Aguilar than, you know, Damir Bird, but like, you could have had this incredibly, significantly better team if you go out and you sign Juju Smith-Schuster and Will Fuller and Gerald Everett and Jared Cook and trade for Lee Smith. Like, you spent less money and you have a really scary group of receivers as opposed to the guys they have who, you know, have pretty low floors. Hunter Henry hasn't been able to stay healthy for most of his career. Nelson Aguilar was a, you know, a veteran minimum guy a year ago. Like, it's just, they've got him better, but I think they missed out on having the opportunity to add a really significant core of talent at those positions.
But they, if they give Aguilar, for instance, 1 year for $8 million, maybe they can get Chris Carson in their building, and, you know, things like, I guess there's a chain reaction to all this, but I have to say, like, even if somebody in Greg knows and the audience gets annoyed at me because they're like, oh, Dan hates the Patriots, which is true. That he was so good for the Raiders last year. I understand the drop rate. It remains an issue, but I feel like every time I watched the Raiders last year, he was making big plays for them. So he could end up being a bargain ultimately.
That's not out of their own possibility, you know, for sure.
It could happen. All right. Let's see. What's it, Greg? Why don't you throw one out there, either of your own or one of Bill's?
Well, I'm curious that you were so down, Bill, on the Lenny Williams deal.
Okay.
Because the only, I know it was like a lot of money. I mean, I guess that's it. But he was just so good that it's like, okay, well, like, I almost feel like it got a little overlooked how good Leonard Williams was last year. And you're kind of building around that scheme. You know, he fits in that scheme. So I don't have a problem with it. Like, you mentioned it takes a lot of things for guys like Trent Williams to hit free agency. Leonard Williams isn't quite there, but Leonard Williams in Patrick Graham's scheme, maybe I'm buying in too much on 1 year sample, but Leonard Williams in Patrick Graham's scheme is almost there for me, that he is like an elite player and you've seen him in this scheme. So I'm fine just paying the money.
Okay. So let's say Leonard Williams had 5.5 sacks last year. Would you feel comfortable with them paying him what they're paying him?
I didn't even know how many sacks he got. He was a game wrecker, like, game after game, and he took over, like, 3 games.
Okay,
so I think he was really good pretty much the other game. So, to me, he was, like, a top 5. He's a unique player because he's kind of a, not exactly an edge or interior. He can do both, but I think he was about as good as it was at that position.
So, he had 6 sacks in 2 games last year against the Seahawks and the Cowboys. So, I watched all his sacks, but I watched those 6 sacks closely. I put them in the column. 2 of those sacks, I'm going to just quote almost directly, were cleanups on pressures created by other players where the quarterback ran into him. Another was a coverage sack against Russell Wilson, who, I don't know if you know this, happens to have a bunch of coverage sacks. Went totally unblocked on a twist to get Wilson for another sack and was just totally unblocked off the edge for a free sack on Andy Dalton. So, like, you know, I don't think that sacks are a great measure of defensive line performance. I don't think that they are signing him because they had those sacks, but I think the perception that he was a game wrecker is in part because he had crazy sack numbers in those 2 games. And I think those sacks are mostly a product of the people around him. And I think he's better than his sack numbers were in years past. But, like, the level he is at right now, the price tag he is at, is Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, Joey Bosa. Like, those guys who are perennial players at that level. If he's the guy he was last year, doesn't matter. The Giants will be happy. He's not going to be, I think, as good as those guys, but he's going to be very good. But he has 1 year in his career at that level in this one scheme. So
it is funny. Go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
No, I mean, like, I just think, like, the odds are that he's not going to be that guy again in 2021 or 2022. And if he's not, then this is a very dramatic overpay for a team that could have used that money to sign 2 or 3 starters on defense.
Because when he was on the Jets, he didn't get home. A lot, but he was a consistent guy causing pressure, hurries,
on some level,
knockdowns.
He's been pretty consistent as a pro, pro.
My larger kind of point on that is, and the NFL, just like many of the sports now, there's a analytics revolution that's well underway. Like how in baseball, for instance, RBIs, people that are in the know say don't put too much into that because that is a product of a lot of things.
Of course.
Sacks on some level feel like they've they've stayed at the top of the priority list for a lot of people that make decisions. Even when you start to break these things down and take a closer look at the film, it could be very misleading in terms of what the guy actually does.
For sure. I think there is a thing where a team, you know, at least on some broad level, whether it's ownership, whether it's the GM, whether it's, okay, we need to get that guy who's going to get us 10 sacks a year. And the comforting thing is seeing a guy who has that double-digit number on his resume where you can sit there and say, okay, well, we know he did it in the past, so he's going to do it again for us. And I think that Leonard Williams is the guy who had that potential and was that kind of guy on a play-by-play basis in terms of generating hits, in terms of generating hurries with the Jets, and was underrated. And now I think because of last year, because of that run right at the end of the year, I think he's a little overrated. So I think he's somewhere in the middle. If this had been like a 12, if this had been the Yannick Ngakoue deal, no issue at all. But I think that that extra $8 million a year they're giving him is going to hurt them because that could have really helped their offensive line or helped them add maybe a quarterback who was competent or another guy on the defensive side of the ball.
You hated the Kenyon Drake to the Raiders move. Hated it.
Did anybody like it? Was anybody out there defending
it? I don't hate it because I like watching Kenyon Drake play football. Like, of course, it's, again, too much money and not, like, a great use of resources. But, like, that's going to be a good backfield. I think Kenyon Drake somehow is not, I don't know if he's underrated, but I think in a 175-touch role, he's, like, you know, he's like bargain guy, bargain Aaron Jones. Like he can have a nice, he'll have a big season for you.
I'm
not going to hate it. It fits with what they do too.
I spent every Cardinals game last year hoping Chase Edmonds was in the backfield and being upset when Kenyon Drake was in the backfield instead.
Wasn't as good last year as the 2 years prior, but was really good the 2 years prior.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they've hinted that he's going to be in the Joker role, which is the same role they wanted to use Lynn Bowden in, if I'm not mistaken, when they drafted him. And they gave up on Lynn Bowden after a training camp and sent him to the Dolphins. With Drake, they're paying him, I think, 8.5 guaranteed in the first year. So they can't give up on him. They need him to be that guy. And I think that is one of those things where I think I don't know who they were bidding against for him to be in that role. Like, I think they see him as a player who could justify making that kind of money in that role if he fills what they need. But, like, given the running back market, he's getting more than Chris Carson. He's getting more than, I mean, guys like Mark Ingram. I just like, wouldn't you rather have Philip Lindsay in that role for a lot less money?
Yeah. In a world where they say the running backs don't get paid, Kenyon Drake's made a lot of money the last two years.
Good for him. Good for him.
You're right. You're right to the point that the Raiders seem like they're always like flailing and changing what their plan is or like covering up past mistakes. But that's what Gruden did in Tampa. Speaking of past mistakes, by the way, I didn't realize we were getting so late. I got to get my son Walker to this passport appointment. It's a hard out. Dan.
Oh, no.
Well, let's wrap it up then. Okay.
We were pretty much there. We were there.
That was good. I was just about to wrap it up anyway. So, yes, check it out on ESPN.com. Bill Barnwell's best and worst free agent signings. There are more on there. So dig in. And also, of course, the Bill Barnwell Show, his great podcast where he has a rotating cast of friends involved. Bill, you've said it all. You've done it all. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Again, sorry to be the bargain basement Sessler for a week, but
no.
Anytime you guys need me to fill in for Mark, happy to do it.
Awesome, Bill. Thank you so much. And again, listeners, remember the Around the NFL broadcast is on NFL Network Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And overseas listeners, you know where to find it on the old Game Pass app. Greg, you got to do your dad work. Thank you very much, buddy. And again, we will be back Friday for the network show, Monday for the podcast. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the great Bill Barnwell. And yes, I'm going to have that poll up there. Boone Bros, Boone Brigade. What's it going to be? We don't know. Dan Hansa signing off for Bill Barnwell, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Until Monday. Heed the call.